Happy Victory Monday. It's Tell the Truth Monday on the Hoffman Show on Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And yes, indeed, we are streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980 as well. And well, it's a Monday. The Commanders played yesterday, and you know what that means. It's time for First and 10.
It's time to get the breakdown started. First up, 10 observations. It's First and 10.
Let us dive right in, shall we?
Number one.
I have no idea what Cliff Kingsbury is doing in the best way. See, some of you were like, me neither. I think that guy sucks. And guess what? We're probably going to wind up answering a couple of those calls during Tell the Truth Monday when we take your calls in just a little bit. But for on a down-to-down basis, in the base plays, what I would say of this offense, the screens, the runs, the RPOs, he is doing a masterful job of detailing up these plays in a way that makes them a lot easier to execute, which is why in between the 20s, this offense has been money this year. Do they need to generate more explosives? Are there steps to go? Is this a finished product or even like a super high quality product at this point? No, it's a work in progress. But the baseline is really, really, really good. And let me explain to you what I mean. So he's using motion and what I would call like false actions to keep defenders from being able to make plays. Hey, we got a cornerback that's going to be a problem on this run. He doesn't have any real responsibility. He's going to crash down and fill the gap where we want this run to go. So we can either have our running back run in to the hole and smash into a corner or have to try to make a miss and probably a four-yard gain. Or we can hold him by running a route. Or we can motion him so that he is, you know, maybe our receiver starts on a tight split and then motions out on a short motion. So at the snap, that cornerback is running away from the play on the play side. Or we might run someone away from the play by motioning them out of the way. Or on run actions on one side, whether it's a true handoff or it's actually an RPO, meaning you could pull the ball and throw the bubble, we're going to put that bubble action on the side. And it doesn't really matter at that point whether the call in the huddle was is those linebackers that would crash down onto the run now have to go, oh, there's a bubble out there, and they have to wait. And that gets them behind the blocks. That gets them everywhere that you want them as an offense, not where they want to be as a defense. On the run plays, like, again, having the bubbles. On the bubbles, having the run action. It works both ways, right? There's a couple of these bubble screens that get out. You know, obviously no one went for a touchdown yesterday, but you have some bigger plays on some of these bubbles because the linebackers are a little late to get there. It lets the blocks get into place. There's just really good detailing of things. Another one I'll add is like in the screen game. So often screens get caught from behind. They call those players rats. Oh, the rat got it. He's able to chase it down. So what do? You have, as an offense, you have rat killers. And in most of these screens, there is an offensive lineman whose job it is to peel back and be the rat killer. And you can see where that matters, where D linemen can't get back into these plays because Nick Allegretti or Sam Cosmi or Andrew Wiley has peeled off and is not even looking to block forward. They are looking to block backward because they understand as an offense that is often where screens get literally tripped up. I love a lot of this detail. And by the way, it's coming in areas where maybe we didn't think it would be the best because we just expected a big vertical passing game because it's Cliff Kingsbury and his air raid roots.
Number two.
With that said, the pass game is a work in progress, and we'll talk about it more in a second. But the run game, oh my God, the run game is a thing of beauty. They have more explosive runs this year than they do explosive passes. And obviously, there's a lot of factors that go into that. Their pass game is still, again, a work in progress. I think Jaden in the drop back game has a long way to go. And it's just stuff he hasn't had to do quite as much before. His footwork and some of the stuff is way more comfortable in the RPO game. And I'll get to that later on in the countdown or the count up, whatever we're doing here. But the run game, to have some of the stuff that I would say is like, hey, that's a Brian Daboll, New York Buffalo tree staple that Bobby Johnson brought with him, the offensive line coach. hey, that's something that kind of has some Kyle Shanahan or some of these other West Coast, roots to it. That's probably an Anthony Lynn run. So, hey, that quarterback run action, that's something that they ran the hell out of in Philadelphia with Jalen Hurts. That was a Brian Johnson. And Cliff has always had a pretty good run game. And to see some of the pulls, different pullers, sometimes you got guard and tackle, sometimes you got center, sometimes you got guard pullers. Shoot, you got some wham and some trap in there. Like, there's a play late in the game where they go wham, like to try to seal the game. They let that defensive tackle come flying upfield, and here comes, I think it was Ben Sinnott, it might have been John Bates. One of them just comes through, blow, tight end coming across, hits that wham block. Brian Robinson sneaks inside of it. First, get closer to a first down or closer field goal for Seibert. It's just like the detail and the beauty of this run game is it's not the sexy thing that everyone wants to talk about. Good radio shows aren't made on great run games, but I'm sure going to appreciate it. Watching the film, man, like some of these plays, the game plan specific details of understanding exactly where they need to hit blocks, understanding which players are going to be really aggressive and that they can use that against them. Understanding their quarterback's ability to like be a flexible human. The one like really wacky looking run play that goes for like 40 where Jaden like turns around and hands the ball off, like his torso's turned 180 degrees. I don't even think I can hand a ball off like that. I'm not flexible enough. That was crazy. And they get guys flying upfield. The timing hits perfectly. Big gaps. The two lead blockers don't even have to block anyone at the first level. Could go on and on, but that'd probably not make for great radio. The point is, pass game, work in progress. Run game, work of beauty.
Number three.
Okay, let's get to Jaden, and then we'll take a break, come back, and talk about some of the other finer points of the game. I would say two big things on Jaden Daniels. First and foremost, the play that Jaden got hurt on is kind of the full Jaden Daniels experience in one play. First of all, it's 3rd and 13, which is not ideal. That's not really on Jaden. I did also, for as much as I liked a lot of what Cliff did, I hated the second down call right before that. He called a QB draw after Jaden had taken a sack on first down. Like, do not get him hit on purpose two plays in a row. Don't love that. Whatever. 3rd and 13. Downfield stuff gets covered. Eckler's open on a check down. Ertz is open on a check down. A lot of quarterbacks just throw it. They get 9 yards. It's 4th and 4. Bring on the punt team. Hey, we'll live to see the next drive. Not Jaden Daniels. And when Dan Quinn talks about, like, I love the competitor, this is what he's talking about. You want a play that emblemizes exactly who Jaden Daniels, the competitor, is? It's, I see Zach Ertz that I could hit for 8 yards, and maybe he runs for 2 more, and maybe he breaks a tackle, but I got a lot of space, and I know what I can do as a runner. So I'm going to take off. And the pocket, it's clean enough. He probably doesn't need to run at the point that he does. It's not perfect by the time he takes off. Allegretti and Biadasz have taken a little pressure. They're double-teaming Dexter Lawrence, but Dexter Lawrence is a maniac. So he's pushed back in the pocket a little bit. But ultimately, they like wash him out and pancake him. Wiley does a really great job on Brian Burns. Cosme's one-on-one with the other defensive tackle, Chapman, takes a little bit of pressure, which makes Jaden uncomfortable. So you got Lawrence coming in front of you. The other DT's getting pushed up a little bit. And he could kind of step up in the pocket, maybe be a little bit more patient. But he knows if he does that, maybe I'm risking getting hit from the backside. The problem is if he does, Luke McCaffrey screams wide open for a touchdown. Like, if he can just step up and somehow stay behind the line of scrimmage and time it right, he just has to loft one Luke McCaffrey. He's got no one within 30 yards of him. But it's all happening really, really fast. And at the time he commits to running, that hasn't happened yet. It's easy for me to say when I watch the film back afterwards. He probably will see that too. And it's something that as he goes, are there still going to be a lot of runs in Jaden Daniels' future? Yes. Is he also going to make sure that he keeps his eyes downfield more and more and more and more? And you saw a couple of plays like that in this game? Absolutely. So, again, 3rd and 13, he commits to run. McCaffrey's not open yet. Nothing else downfield is open. Pretty good coverage. Got a couple of checkdowns. Don't want it. And he gets about 9 yards in, and he has a point where he could safely slide. And again, just, hey, I got my rushing yards. I tried. Nobody tripped and fell over their own shoelace. And so I'm just going to get stopped here. But that's not who he is. That's not why they drafted him. They drafted him because of the competitor. It is a feature, not a bug. And so he throws his body towards the line again, line to gain, and I don't have a problem with it. Like, it's 3rd and 13. You've gotten 11 yards at this point. Now is the time to put your body on the line. Now is the time to take a hit. And Jaden Daniels is going to have to take some hits because otherwise that means he's never running. And this is the time to take one. You've gotten yourself, basically, if you're willing to take the hit, a first down. It is unfortunate that he takes a helmet that knocks the wind out of him. But it happens. And thankfully, it was just the wind knocked out of him. He didn't break a rib or anything. But he gets the first down. He missed one play and he came back. That is, in a lot of ways, right now at least, the Jaden Daniels experience. Probably could have something bigger if he's a touch more patient. Pretty good feel for the pocket. Will get better as he goes. Can take a situation where a lot of quarterbacks would just do the easy, simple thing, and it's easy. What was I supposed to do? It's, you know, check down was there, so I just checked it down. And he takes what could be a solid play that doesn't ultimately lead to success getting the first down, and he makes it into something successful. That is the magic of Jaden Daniels, and it is something that is going to win this franchise a lot of football games.
Number four.
Last but not least on Jaden, the areas of improvement that scream out from the tape in this game. His feet need to get a lot better in drop back, which kind of duh. He's a rookie adjusting to a new offense and the new speed of a game. Every offense has drop backs that are a little bit different. So even though he didn't have to do a ton of drop back work at LSU, because a lot of it was, you know, quick game, even some of the deeper throws, it's like, I got Malik Nabers one-on-one. Let's throw the ball to Malik Nabers. It's 1-2-3, balls out. So some of these more 5-7-step drops, so even out of shotgun and out of pistol, like, they're all new to him, and the game is a lot faster, and he is at times a little sped up, and I think part of that is his feet aren't quite underneath him yet. I will also say, I am not as well versed in the timing of Cliff's offense yet, so some of these might be right, and it just looks off to me because I'm so used to West Coast tape after the past bunch of years and the Zampezi stuff that Scott Turner ran that is very similar in a lot of the passing. So maybe it's my eyes. I'm willing to admit that. But it looks off kilter. It looks a little sped up. And there's a couple of good examples of this in the game. Second quarter, 3:51 to go. They have the ball in the Giants 30. And he goes to throw an out to Brian Robinson. And he just... it's a bad throw. Bad ball. Ball lands way outside his feet. I loved a lot of the stuff to set this up. You know, talk about good stuff from Cliff. Like, they're in 12 personnel. It's Sinnott and Bates is the tight end, and Robinson is the back. And you're thinking, that's a running formation. No, they're in freaking empty. And Jaden just doesn't nail the footwork, misses the throw. Later, he works back to Terry on a comeback. He just kind of lunges super weirdly into the throw. This is the one that Terry... I guess technically it's a drop. Terry would tell you he needs to catch it because it hits him in the hand, but it's a bad ball. It's like down and outside, and the throw is just super awkward. Later, he has Diami on the route at the back of the end zone. He gets pressure, but like, if he can figure out a way to slide and step up and the timing's a little bit better, then that's probably a touchdown because Diami gets open in the timing of the play. So Coleman lost, but I don't know that it was that instant that he couldn't have made it happen, or that an elite quarterback wouldn't make it happen. So, again, that's not to say that Jaden's doing a bad job, because that is not true. This kid is playing really, really well, especially for a rookie. You see Caleb Williams struggle. You see Bo Nix struggle. It's hard being a rookie quarterback in the NFL. He's got zero turnovers. He has scored some touchdowns on the ground. No throwing yet, but he's moved the ball. He's led 15 drives so far as a pro. 12 ended in a field goal attempt or a touchdown. That's ridiculous. But if we're talking about where does he go, because we're doing the evaluation as a whole here, that is an area where he can definitely grow. All right, when we get back, we'll fly through the rest of our first and 10, including some thoughts on the defense here on The Hoffman Show. It's The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube if you like, as well at the Team 980. All right, finishing up our first and 10 as quickly as we can here before we take your calls at 301-230-0980. It's a Tell the Truth Monday, so you get to tell the truth about what you think of the game coming up at 430-301-230-0980.
Number five.
The Giants did a really, really good job most of the game on the quarterback run stuff. And that is because they have freakish athletes at the defensive end position. It's going to be interesting to watch how they use some of the zone read stuff as the year goes on. And I think some games are going to be really tough with that, but it's important to keep doing because even if you wind up handing the ball a lot, like, okay, fine. Theoretically, on a zone read, you should always be having the ball carrier go into good numbers. But the way to ruin that is to essentially, is a defense play with 12 guys on the field, as if to say the guy who they're reading, if he is athletic enough to cover both the handoff and the read, not a lot you can do about that. You leave him unblocked on purpose in the hopes that he takes himself out of the play. And unfortunately for Washington, Brian Burns and Kayvon Thibodeau did an excellent job of staying square, leaning in, forcing Jaden to keep it, and then they were fast enough to actually stay with Jaden. And there's even a couple of times where they kind of force the handoff and can still go make the play inside. That's just special athleticism. But it also sets up like some of the other stuff later in the game. It sets up some of these bubbles. It sets up some of the RPO looks that they get. So it's important because it's a core piece of their offense. But just really a kudos to the Giants, who I think did a pretty special job in defending the quarterback run.
Number six.
Okay, let's talk about it. Daron Payne and John Allen, they just simply have to produce more. Their PFF grades weren't bad in this game. I don't really know how. I'm going to reserve more comments on those two specifically until I talk to Logan about this tomorrow on Take Command. So make sure you're subscribed to Take Command to get that as soon as can possibly be in your ears. But realistically, like, I feel like a lot of the big plays that the Giants had in the running game were right through the gaps that Allen and Payne should have been in. I actually thought that if you were to pull up, I don't have the ability to do this. I might have to ask someone with a little bit more data access to do it. My guess is that like when Phil Mathis and Jerzon Newton were on the field, that the yards per play was better than when Allen and Payne were on the field, because there are just a ton of gashes right up the middle for those dudes. And Daron got some pressures on the Cleveland Furl sack. Like, he's the one who kind of forces it. Allen had a quarterback hit, at least one that I remember. So it's not like they did nothing, but you're paying those dudes a lot of money to have two tackles combined, both by John Allen. Payne had no tackles in the game. That's not good enough. And I think the thing that's really frustrating is, on top of not getting production, they're actively hurting you in certain situations. And what I don't, here's the other thing I don't know is, are they doing what's asked and others are not covering for them? Or are they taking themselves out of plays because they're not doing the things that they're supposed to? So if they get really aggressive and get up the field quickly on a play that just gets run right by them, like, there's one lead play where they don't even have to bother with the defensive tackle. Like, the guard just escorts John Allen up the field and the fullback and the halfback just go into a 6-yard wide hole, and you're just like, what are we doing, man? We can't win like this. And like, sometimes I know fans are getting mad at Jeremy Chinn for missing tackles in the hole. What do you expect? The hole is 10 yards wide. That's not a reasonable ask for a safety to get from like the hash to the opposite guard. You can't tackle an NFL running back in that space. And so it's that's not good enough from those guys. And I don't know whether it's them or it's a design flaw, but either way, there's a lot of other defensive stuff that I understand. That part of it, I truly do not understand.
Number seven.
Obviously, number seven has to be Austin Seibert. I don't really have a lot to say. He told a great story after the game about how in the offseason he trains in a lot by his house and he tries to hit a pine tree, and his wife and daughter are out there with him, and it's a family affair. Like, good for Austin Seibert. Good for the Commanders. I will say this. You want to talk about good scouting? Seibert was with the Jets when the Commanders were joint practicing with the Jets, and he was on their list because they were watching the other field on the day that their kickers were struggling. Seibert was perfect on his kicks. He doesn't have the biggest leg. I think they understood that, and it didn't become a huge issue yesterday in terms of there was no like, hey, this is a 52-yarder. Do we kick it or do we go for it type of situation on a 4th and 5 at the whatever yard line it needs to be a 52-yarder, the 37 or whatever it is. So, like, okay, that's good. We'll see if it's an issue moving forward. But for yesterday, the man was asked to hit 7 field goals. He hit them all. So he's number 7. Good job, Austin Seibert. Bad job, number 8. Come on, number 8. I'm clicking you over here. I got number 8. Number 8's rebelling. Number 8. All right. The play style arrived more yesterday. Frankie Louvu had some absolute slappers of hits. The hit on Malik Nabers early when he cracked back on him. Oh, my God. That was physical. That was violent. And he had about 3 more of those in the game. Bobby Wagner had a couple of big hits, including one on Daniel Jones in the 4th quarter that made me rewind the tape. And it's just Jones is like slithering through and Wagner just thumps him. And so it is something that's still a work in progress. Obviously, there's some missed tackles and there's still a lot to clean up defensively. But at the very least, they played a lot faster and they were way more physical yesterday. I no longer have any numbers. So number 9, the screen game is going to require better blocking for big, big plays. And some of these require better blocking to even get off the ground. And I hate to say it because I love the guy, but that's going to mostly be a comment focused at Terry McLaurin. He did not have a good blocking day yesterday. I don't think he had a particularly good one in week 1. And it's going to be a thing that's going to have to get cleaned up because to play receiver in this offense, yes, you want to be a guy who gets the football, but you also are a guy that is going to have to block because that's the nature of it. So let's get that cleaned up, please. And then number 10, with 14:32 to go in the 2nd quarter, they hit the big play to Zach Ertz, which, by the way, great catch by Ertz. Also probably could have been not quite as difficult had he not continued to back up. If he goes and attacks the football, I wonder if that's a coaching point. But regardless, he makes the play. No complaints from me. And they weren't so sure it was a catch, and neither was Brian Daboll. Daboll went to go try to challenge, but the Commanders got up to the line and got a playoff. And not only did they get a playoff, they got a little rollout where they lob a little ball to Ertz in the flat, and he picks up some yardage. And there's no challenge. And I just think that game management, getting it right, is good. We love that. So good job. Good job, game management. Bravo. Situational football. Hasn't been executed around these parts in a long time. And so I thought I'd point it out here to end 1st and 10. All right. Coming up next, it is our Tell the Truth Monday. So here's what you do. You call in 301-230-0980 or you leave a comment on YouTube about what you thought about the game, and then we respond to it. So Tell the Truth Monday is next here on The Hoffman Show. It's The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are currently not streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980 because our entire internet system just went down. So, Anthony, I've started to take notes on my on the notepad the last couple weeks. Thank God I got those if I need to look anything up because I don't have anything that's on the internet. So we're going to do a radio show like the 1990s. We're going to take some phone calls. We're going to do the best we can, and we're going to hope that the internet comes back soon, and we'll go from there. But 301-230-0980, we don't have internet, but our phone lines still work. So let's go to, on the Tell the Truth Monday, following the Commanders' first win of the season, let's go to Doug in Richmond. Doug, thanks for calling. You're on the Hoffman Show.
Victory Monday, and it feels so good, Craig. How you doing?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Good. Quick question before I get into anything. Let me know what the vibe was in the building at Northwest Fed Stadium, being up in the press box. How was that?
It was a good crowd yesterday. Like I think it was like there were a lot of Giants fans, as is typical for a division game in the Northeast. Mm-hmm. Because you know it's an easy train ride down. It's an easy car ride down, however people want to do it. But like, stadium was pretty full. A lot of Commanders fans. Definitely some good juice in the building. I think a lot of apprehension in the building, but ultimately some good juice as people, you know, we're excited to see the home opener, to see Jaden. And I think one thing that was really cool, this actually got brought up in the press conference, was how like attuned they were to Jaden when he got hurt. And then when he came back in, people were really psyched about it. So I think it's going to be fun to watch this crowd grow. And obviously, it's a while till the next home game, but going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, it looked good on TV, so that I would ask. Okay, so I do a pro and a con for, like, both sides of the ball. On offense, I think Austin and B-Rob are going to be such a great tandem to see. Austin looks so spry. I'm sad that he didn't get that kick return for a touchdown. But other than that, I mean, and B-Rob was insane. And I love the little jab that it's been a while since he's gotten 17 carries. I love that. But he ran the ball really well. And then the only con is the red zone penalties killer. You hope that they get that cleaned up. More discipline up there when you're getting on where you make your money, on where you score. So that's an issue. And on defense, what I liked that they made an adjustment, Craig. They got Michael Davis out the game in the second half when they saw he was struggling against neighbors. That was really good. And then they put Ben State Juice on him and Noah. They didn't stop. They didn't like shut him down, but they slowed him down enough to where it was manageable. And then the only thing is that those two D tackles. B. Mitch said earlier when I was listening to Tim on his show. That both of the tackles, they couldn't get off the blocks. They were too engaged at times, and they wouldn't move to stop the run. They were too into trying to get the QB on those runs. And then if we're giving up 120 rushing yards per game. And last year we were giving up 126. So it's got to get cleaned up. But those are my takeaways.
No, I think there's some really good ones there. Appreciate the call, Doug. The D tackle thing, I think there's a lot of different issues with the D tackles right now. I do think sometimes they're getting stuck on blocks. I do think that sometimes they are getting too aggressive, which sounds crazy. It's like, how do you get too aggressive? Like, you're John Allen and Daron Payne. Like, being aggressive, getting upfield is how you play. But I think it was pretty obvious watching the film that, like, Brian Daboll and Mike Kafka, the head coach and OC in New York, watched the Tampa tape and were like, we can do some of that. Some of the same mistakes. It's miscommunications in bunches. It's super aggressive defensive tackles that they're getting blocked. And then, hey, sometimes we can kind of let them through and use that against them. We can run right by them, or we can hit them with a wham or a trap and use their aggressiveness against them. And so, again, I'm going to reserve judgment on the D tackles until I have a chance to talk to Logan about it. And also I'm sure that guys like Kime who watch the tape and then go do reporting like during the week, this is what I used to do, right? Is you watch some tape and then you go in the locker room and you'd find some stuff out. And as the week goes, I think we'll learn a little bit more about what it is they want them to do. But like, very clearly, what we can say on a Monday, on a Tell the Truth Monday, which you can get in on at 301-230-0980, is they're not playing well enough. They're not producing to the level that they need to produce for this defense to be good. They are leaving significant holes to fill behind them for Bobby Wagner and Jeremy Chinn and Frankie Louvu that sometimes those guys aren't able to fill because it would be superhuman to do so. And that job's not always pretty. That job's not always glorious. But at the end of the day, you gotta get it done, and they have not been able to get it done. I have another coverage thing that I'm hoping we get to eventually. We'll talk about it when we get to it. 301-230-0980. Let's go to Wayne. Wayne, thanks for calling. You're on the Hoffman Show.
Hey, Craig, I listen to you all the time, and then if I don't listen to you during the day, I go back and get on my iPad and catch you guys on the podcast.
Yeah, Wayne gets the show. All right, Wayne, love to hear it.
Yeah, man, I got a couple of things. Tyler Owens, The guy that really showed in the preseason, is he on the practice squad, and what is his position?
He is a safety. He's not on the practice squad. He's on the active roster, but, I mean, he's stuck behind Chin and Quan and Percy Butler, all of whom are playing decently good football. And I think sometimes we got to remember, Wayne, that, you know, guys that flash in the preseason, especially guys that are farther down the roster, are playing against second and third string guys, and some of those guys aren't even in the league right now. So Tyler Owens is an undrafted free agent who's predominantly going to be a special teams guy this year, and you know, unless there's injuries, and that's what I tend to think of where we're at with Owens.
Okay, second question, Craig. Jamin Davis, is he on disciplinary action, or he was missing in action? He's not injured. What's the story on him? Because he wasn't even on the roster.
No, good question, yesterday. Wayne. And actually, this was a question that was asked of Dan Quinn in his press conference this afternoon. And what Quinn said was it was a numbers game, that typically they have five defensive ends eligible or up on a game day. Obviously, you have to have some inactive players. And because they knew that Johnny Newton was going to be on basically a pitch count, a snap count, they decided to go with five defensive tackles instead. So they switched their numbers on their D-line. And as the guy who was, I guess, last on the depth chart of defensive ends, Jamin was the guy who wound up being down. I would presume in the future that he is back up and that there is another one of the defensive tackles that is down. But that was the plan for today. They basically chose Javonte Jean-Baptiste, the seventh round pick that they took this year, over Jamin. And I know Jamin made a couple of plays last week, but I guess they liked what they saw on the other snaps from Jean-Baptiste better, and he's the guy that they went with.
But you and Anthony keep doing what you're doing, man. I listen to you guys. Y'all the best.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely, Wayne. Thank you. 301-230-0980 is the phone number, 301-230-0980. It is a Tell the Truth Monday on a Victory Monday. What you got for the Commanders, 301-230-0980. More of your calls next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Again, we are unable to stream currently on YouTube at the Team 980 because we are working on getting our internet back. But our engineers are superheroes, and they're doing their best, so we'll figure it out. Anthony, I real quick before we get back to the phones on a Tell the Truth Monday at 301-230-0980, after having the Chiefs in week one on NBC, I guess they didn't get their Taylor Swift fix last night. I just saw that they put Taylor and Swift jerseys next to each other.
I was so disturbed by that yesterday. Disturbed.
I'm not a Taylor Swift hater by any stretch of the imagination. I'm certainly not a Swiftie either. But, like, can people just freaking chill out and stop being weird about it?
Yeah, they're forcing it.
Like, that's dumb. Don't do that. It's a football game. Travis Kelce's, like, if the Bears were playing the Chiefs and she was there, no problem with it. That's a funny bit.
Yeah.
To, like, work her into the broadcast when, or, like, if they made a tackle together or something. But to be like, hey, look what we found. Sorry, they just, Sunday Night Football replays on NFL Network right now on my TV, and it just popped up, and I was like, this is dumb.
So I didn't have the audio playing when I did see it.
I didn't either.
But do you think it's because she's the person of the year for some magazine or something like that?
If so, who cares? You're calling a football game. By the way, it's a 6-point game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Crunch time, too. Under
crunch
three.
Time. Under three in a game whose line was 6.5, and I said the Bears would cover. Whoops.
And this is where I turn off my mic.
Yep. See you again on Competition Wednesday, Anthony. All right, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Our internet does not work, but our phones do. Let's go to Will I Am in Florida. Will, what's up? Tell the Truth Monday time on the Hoffman Show.
Hey, how are you, buddy? What a win. We needed that so bad. I was thinking of Sean Taylor, and I'll tell you why. After going... after Siebert pulled six, I said, man, this one's going to be shanked. I just had a bad feeling. And then I saw that 21 points pop up, and I said, thank you, Sean. you know, that bad UU we have against those damn Giants, it's over. The curses are going to start falling. I just got optimistic. I'm excited. I know DQ is he's being patient with this team, which they need. Got so many young guys and some guys that won't be here next year that are vets. So it's just, we just need to be patient. I know we're desperate for winning, but I'm just glad, happy to see that we finally got a stud back there. He's gonna take us places. This kid has everything. He's got that more than anything, the IQ. And I thought about how would this be looking if Howell was here? I loved Howell. He was a tough dude, but he just didn't know when to tuck and run. And thank God we got someone. I just hope and pray he doesn't get hurt. But you know what? I'm not gonna worry about it. This is football. But anyways, man, the truth is Sean Taylor got us one. Hail to the commies.
All right. Thanks, Willie. I don't know whether if that's the deity or the higher power that you think got that through yesterday, that fine. If you think it's the power bestowed in Austin Seibert's pine tree in the lot by his house, so be it. Whatever the reason is, they won. And I feel like this is one of those games that for a fan, you can spin it either way. You can either be like, oh my God, they didn't score in the red zone. They got lucky. I mean, it is truly wild, Anthony, this stat, that they are the first team to ever give up 3 touchdowns, score none, and win in regulation. Which a lot of people were phrasing yesterday as the Giants are the first team to lose, which just means the same thing going the other way. But the Commanders, I'm going to phrase it through a Washington perspective. The Commanders are the first team in NFL history to give up 3 touchdowns, score none, and win. And it took their kicker going 7-for-7, while the other kicker got hurt on the opening kickoff, a fluky play that gets called back. Like, it's a touchdown that gets called back. So had Austin Ekeler like seen the flag and given up or whatever, you know, any other version of that play, Graham Gano doesn't yank his hamstring. Maybe if Nick Ballore doesn't hold, that doesn't get out. Maybe that penalty actually won them the game.
Mm.
Because the strategy of the Giants changes in the final drive for sure, if not in other parts of the game. So you could look at it that way, that they got lucky. Or you could say the Giants got lucky not to get blown out. Because ultimately, they had 8 drives in the game to the Commanders.
Yep.
Scored on 7 of them. The other one was a kneel down right before the halftime. One play, kneel down. So you can look at it either way. You can say, even if the Commanders go, you know, score touchdowns on 3 of those, that's what, 4 extra points per drive, assuming that Seibert hits the extra point. 4 times 3 is 12. So that's 12 extra points.
Yep.
That's a pretty good day at the office for the offense. Maybe it changes the way the Giants call the game and they have to be a little more aggressive and Daniel Jones has to make a couple more plays. Do they get a pick? Or should Malik Nabers just get 10 more catches and maybe that's a bad thing? Like, that's the thing. You can play the what-if game all day. You can play the hypothetical whatever game all day. At the end of it, the game that happened was the one that happened. The Commanders managed it very, very well. They moved the football. They need to figure out the red zone, which starts with the simplest thing of, like, stop going offsides. Because not only was it offsides in the red zone, like, a couple of them were on 3rd and short. And we're like, it wasn't
third
even...
3rd and 1.
3rd and... Right. It's like 3rd and 1 at the 4. So if you just don't jump offsides and you get a yard, or you get no gain, but maybe now it's 4th and 1, you probably go for it. There was a 4th and 1 that they were going to go for it, and then they got called for a false start. And all those plays, like, are they not getting in on those? So it's just the simplest stuff where you're like, oh my God, can you just hold your water for 5 seconds, bro? It's like some of them too. There's one, the one that we watched with Cosme.
Oh, yep.
Where they were going to run some kind of trick play where Brian Robb, like they start with Jaden in the gun, Robinson offset to his right. Jaden gives you set hut. They shift over. Now Jaden's lined up behind the guard as a running back, and B-Rob's lined up as the quarterback behind center. Set hut again to like dummy cadence or whatever. And I'm guessing they probably called on 2 in the huddle, but they also called the motion. The first set hut gets you the motion. Now you're at hut, hut. But on the second noise, which really is the first, or however they count it, Cosme jumps. Like, they had stuff down there. They caused themselves real bad situations, and I just refuse to think that in the long run that's going to be that bad.
Yeah, for if you were to tell me the Commanders will go 0-6 in the red zone and still win this game, I never, ever would have believed you, ever.
Right, because teams typically, by the way, when they go that badly in the red zone, it's turnovers.
Yeah.
You get picked down there because it's hard to squeeze balls in tight spaces. And you got to give Jaden Daniels a ton of credit for managing the game.
Mm-hmm.
But they got to clean it. They got to be better down there. But the defense also like had a couple of drives where they made plays and got a couple of stops.
Got helped out too. That drop by Malik Nabers.
That was a tough play.
Huh? Craig.
On the fourth down?
All he is doing is leaning. The ball hits his hand. That is a routine play for...
Yeah, but it's a tough angle, and it's made harder because there's traffic in front of him. Like, Noah could have played that one better. He's a little far inside for my liking as a cover two corner. But, like, the timing is funky. And when you're trying to get that toe tap and you're focused on that and the timing is off, like, again, is it a catch that Malik Nabers probably is going to make a ton in the future?
Yep.
Yeah. Is it a catch that's, like, routine? I wouldn't quite go that far. But, like... The one thing that I will say that from a defensive standpoint that I haven't mentioned yet that I probably should have put in first and 10 is they made a change in the fourth quarter. They were playing a ton of man-to-man on third down, and they were playing a ton of single high stuff in general, whether mm-hmm. it's cover three, cover one, man, whatever. And they stopped. And they started playing two, like at the very least two high shells, but a lot of cover two and cover four stuff to eliminate those one-on-one matchups. And I asked DQ about it after the game in the locker room, and he's like, yeah, Nabers, we had to do something. And they just got to a point where they're like, we know what we want to do, but we can't. So what's our other options? And like, again, last week it was Cliff. This week it's Joe and Dan that I'm like, these guys are not asleep at the wheel. They're willing to make adjustments. Would I have maybe done that a little sooner? Yeah, probably. But they also, you know, the first half, they wanted to see what they could do. Second half, they had a new player out there. They wanted to give him some opportunities to execute within the scheme that they thought was best. And then once he couldn't do it, it was like, okay, well, now we're out of players. We're out of, you know, we're out of scheme or out of this scheme. Let's try another scheme. And so that's the way it goes. And remember, that probably feels later than it is because the Giants ran so few plays because the Commanders had the ball forever in this game. So that's something I ultimately like. Like, I don't like that it was bad, but I like that they make the adjustment. All right, when we get back on the Hoffman Show, stay tuned for our journey into reviving the internet. But again, our phones do work, so Michael Phillips is going to call us.